But more, we are going to begin the side event. We have organized it with four opening remarks at the beginning. Then we will have four panelists. So I will be co-chairing with Setareki Makanawai from the International Disability Alliance. He's the CEO of the Pacific Disability Forum. And we will have, for the opening remarks, Ms. Daniela Bass, Ms. Maria Soledad Cisternas, Mr. Piti Vergesi, and Ms. Catalina De Bandas. So we will begin with Ms. Daniela Bass, who is the director of the Division for Social Policy and Development of UNDESA.
Good afternoon, everybody. Can you hear me properly? Good. I just came back from a regional consultation that was held in Latin America, hosted by Brazil, in preparation of the high-level meeting on disability and development. And I have to say that I was very much impressed by what I saw there. And I have to tell you that most governments that were present there spoke a lot about the need to strengthen efforts for people who are indigenous peoples, particularly for indigenous peoples and disability. So I think that the meeting today is taking place at the very right and appropriate time, also in light not only of the mandate of the Forum of Indigenous Peoples, but also of the next following very important meetings that are going to take place here in New York in July, when the Conference of the State Parties for the Rights of People with Disabilities is going to be held, which also will be in preparation of the high-level meeting on disability next September, to be precise, on the 23rd of September this year. So I do hope that the forum this year here would also wish to contribute even more than it has already done in support of all and any sustainable activities that promote development for indigenous peoples, particularly for peoples who have disabilities. Sorry if I started in a very informal way, but before I go on with my few minutes of speech, I feel I do have and I do wish to greet these distinguished panelists and the representatives from governments and colleagues and friends. I am really very happy to be here today in New York, as I was very happy to be yesterday in Latin America. I wish also to thank the government of Australia for sponsoring this event and to recognize the important work of the Disability Rights Advocacy Fund and also of AIDA in co-organizing this panel. Well, I have already been introduced, so I will skip who I am. But I wish to share with you one thing about my division I wish it were my division, the division I have the honor to lead. In the Division for Social Policy and Development, we host both the Secretariat for the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues and also the Secretariat for the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, besides also hosting in the division I lead other very important focal points within the whole UN system, that is the focal point on youth, the focal point on elderly, and the focal point on the family, besides having as a mandate to find ways to eradicate extreme poverty, to promote employment and decent work, and of course, social integration. Today's panel is therefore of particular interest to us, and the theme is one of those with great importance and a priority issue for DSPD, that is the division I lead, is the advancement of the rights of persons with disabilities and of Indigenous peoples, as well as, of course, their inclusion into the development area. We very much believe that to succeed in this, it is essential that a disability perspective be included in work on the situations of Indigenous peoples, and that work on disability inclusive development incorporate also Indigenous perspectives. Unfortunately, Indigenous persons with disabilities have all too often been invisible in both movements. There is increasingly an effort to change this, and this is why we're sitting here today. There are, I think, about 20 Indigenous persons with disabilities this year. Last year there were 7, and before then, 0. So I think that slowly but surely we are moving forward. There is increasingly an effort to change this, as I said, so to bridge the two movements, the movement of persons with disabilities and the one of Indigenous persons, so that they work together and they can grow internationally. From the participation of a strong delegation of Indigenous persons with disabilities of last year and today and the future, I can see that we can really do something to promote the Millennium Development Goals. There are still a few years to go, and make sure that your deliberations of today keep in mind and keep the focus on the post-2015 Sustainable Development Agenda. Make good use of what has been discussed last year in Rio and the final document of Rio Plus 20, where empowerment and participation, Indigenous peoples, people with disabilities, and a few other were words that were used very often. So don't forget about that. Capitalize it. And think where you want to be in 30 years from now. Don't think small, think big. Where do you want to be in 30 years from now? And so whatever you are going to deliberate has to be, in my humble view, in that direction. Today you'll be discussing the report. And the report includes important recommendations to Indigenous peoples' organizations and organizations of persons with disabilities, to states and to the UN, among others. I take particular note of the two of the recommendations directed to the Department of Economic and Social Affairs. These call for improved data and statistics regarding the situation of Indigenous persons with disabilities, and the generation of further research and analysis on the situation of Indigenous persons with disabilities. Data and statistics, research and analysis. You see, when politicians have to take action, this is the kind of data they look at. So we have to be strong in these areas, very strong. I take this opportunity to reaffirm DASA's strong commitment to these issues, and we hope to engage in more events like this, both at future sessions of the Permanent Forum as well as in the sessions of the Conference of the State Parties for the, you know, to promote the rights of persons with disabilities. And allow me to say, again, thinking big, think of all people who have some kind of reduced mobility on a temporary or on a permanent basis. Because in this way, more people can identify in what you're discussing and you can hook to many other areas. Temporary reduced disability or mobility means you go on holidays or you're hunting or whatever you're doing and you break your leg or your arm. On a temporary basis, you have reduced mobility. So if you think big, you try to include in all dimensions of life, be it social life, economic life, or the environmental dimension, anything that is related to people who are indigenous and people who have disabilities, and you merge them together, and then you promote these in many other areas by using also an approach where a wider audience can identify. You have to find ways for people to identify in what you're talking about. Then you are hooked there, and you can promote in other scenarios, in other fora, what you are discussing here today. I'm sorry it took too long. I'm a very passionate person, and as you might have noticed, I very seldom follow the talking points that my people prepare for me, so they might wonder why they have to write them. So I wish really to thank you. I look forward to your inputs in this forum, at the Conference of the State Parties on Disability in July, and also at the High-Level Meeting on Disability in September, and I look forward to working with you all as we move ahead, taking full advantage of the many, many opportunities before us. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Daniela, for reminding us about the need to bridge the disability and indigenous rights perspective, to bridge the two movements, and to focus on 2015 and think big. That is a clear message, and also the commitment from the division to really take up the recommendations of the report.
Thank you, Mona. As a co-facilitator with Ms. Cunningham on this side event, and acknowledging as well as drawing our attention to the topic, the theme of the side event, the rights of indigenous persons with disabilities, a call to action. It is then only fitting for me to introduce the next speaker, Ms. Maria Soledad de Sestanas, who is also the chair of the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities Committee, the CRPD Committee. Some of us had the good fortune of spending some few moments with her last night. And we welcome her this morning to share her presentation and to, I guess, also challenge us in terms of way forward and calling to action the implementation, the recognition of the rights of persons, indigenous persons with disabilities. Thank you, Maria.
Gracias. ¿Se escuchan ahí? ¿Sí? ¿Sí? ¿Encendido?
Sí.
Ya. Buenas tardes a todos y a todas. En la lengua de la etnia indígena de mi país, mapuche, idioma mapudungún, mi saludo es Marri Peñi para todos ustedes. Gracias a Zeta por la presentación. Por el momento que compartimos ayer con un grupo de personas con discapacidad. Y también me congratulo de las palabras que ha realizado Daniela Bass, porque hace importantes invitaciones hacia un sector tan importante de la población como es el de personas con discapacidad indígenas. Como presidenta del Comité sobre los Derechos de las Personas con Discapacidad de Naciones Unidas, quiero decirles que el propósito de promover, proteger y asegurar el goce pleno y en condiciones de igualdad de todos los derechos humanos y libertades fundamentales en igualdad de condiciones con los demás y el respeto de la dignidad inherente de todas las personas con discapacidad es la carta de navegación y el faro que orienta nuestro trabajo. En esto tenemos en cuenta toda la diversidad de las distintas formas de discapacidad y desde luego la situación particular de discapacidad de mujeres, de niños y niñas con discapacidad, pero también aquellas personas indígenas y quienes viven en sectores rurales. Quiero decirles que entre los principios de la Convención, que son principios universales y generales como la dignidad, la autonomía, la libertad de tomar las propias decisiones y la independencia de las personas, la igualdad de oportunidades, la no discriminación, la igualdad entre el hombre y la mujer, la participación y la inclusión plena. Debemos reconocer también la accesibilidad universal, pero especialmente el reconocimiento de la diversidad entre lo cual se encuentra la discapacidad como parte de la vida en la sociedad. Y desde esa perspectiva es que el comité ha tenido mucho énfasis en, desde luego, aplicar el modelo social y de derechos humanos de las personas con discapacidad en el análisis de los informes de los Estados partes. Por lo tanto, esto significa el desterrar el modelo médico asistencial, desde el cual antes se veía a la persona con discapacidad con el solo acento en la deficiencia. En esta visión multifocal de derechos humanos, a la deficiencia se debe sumar la interacción con barreras que experimentan las personas en el ambiente y cómo son las restricciones a la participación. Y en la eliminación de barreras y en la creación de medidas de acción afirmativa que promuevan los derechos de las personas con discapacidad, está todo el entorno que tiene que ver con legislación, con políticas públicas y con la eliminación de barreras socioculturales y actitudinales. En este sentido, la Convención tiene también como principio la no discriminación. Vale decir, eliminar todas las distinciones, restricciones o exclusiones que implican el propósito o el efecto de obstaculizar o dejar sin aplicación el reconocimiento, goce o ejercicios de derechos humanos y libertades fundamentales en los planos civil, político, económico, social, cultural y de cualquier otra índole. Sobre ese marco, el comité, en su trabajo de revisión de los informes de los Estados partes, ha tenido especial atención a los sectores de personas con discapacidad indígenas. Y es así como, de manera pública, ustedes van a poder encontrar en la página del comité cuáles han sido las recomendaciones respecto de aquellos estados que tienen poblaciones indígenas significativas. Y me refiero en esto a la revisión del informe de Perú, a la revisión del informe de Argentina y de Paraguay. Tenemos en vista también luego la revisión del informe de Australia y más adelante viene Costa Rica, viene México, República Dominicana, entre aquellos que cuentan con poblaciones indígenas significativas. Para hacer un resumen de las recomendaciones del comité en esta materia, quiero decirles que ha habido un especial énfasis, en primer lugar, a la participación. Con ello estamos abocándonos al artículo tercero de la Convención, el numeral 4, que se refiere a la participación que deben tener las personas con discapacidad en todos los asuntos que les conciernen. Y es allí donde el comité ha señalado expresamente que ve con mucha atención la participación de personas con discapacidad indígena, pero también manifiesta la preocupación de que el sector de personas indígenas con discapacidad no ha tenido una participación suficiente y efectiva. Relacionado con esto, el comité ha hecho ver como un motivo de preocupación la falta de estadísticas que den cuenta de manera cuantitativa y cualitativa la situación de las personas con discapacidad indígenas. y en esto ha hecho especial referencia a la situación de mujeres, de niñas y de niños con discapacidad. Se ha referido particularmente a las situaciones de maltrato, violencia, explotación o abuso que pueden experimentar este sector particular de la población, como también los afrodescendientes. Por lo tanto, invita a los estados a adoptar medidas que eviten y que impidan el maltrato estructural, la violencia y el abuso respecto de personas indígenas con discapacidad, con consideración, como les decía, mujeres, niñas y niños. Y en esta adopción de medidas está toda la legislación y políticas públicas que se pueden adoptar en la materia. También se ha referido el comité específicamente a la necesidad de educación para personas con discapacidad de origen indígena y afrodescendientes, ya que es importante superar el analfabetismo que se ha visto muchas veces en este sector de la población. Y por lo tanto, ha señalado que es importante, y lo dice expresamente, colocar recursos económicos que vayan en pro de esta alfabetización y en pro de la educación de personas con discapacidad indígena. Luego quisiera comentarles también que el comité, en esta preocupación especial de cruzar distintos aspectos que tienen que ver con la situación de personas con discapacidad, en abril pasado realizó un foro, un segmento, un panel, que se refirió a mujeres y niñas con discapacidad indígena. Y ahí entonces tuvimos la suerte de contar con personas que se encuentran actualmente presentes en este foro, como es el caso de Olga y como es el caso de Dorín, quienes pudieron exponer la situación de mujeres y niñas con discapacidad de origen indígena. Con esto les quiero decir que el comité tiene un firme propósito de relevar esta situación, siguiendo no solo el articulado, sino que el preámbulo de la convención, que ya desde allí habla de la preocupación por los sectores indígenas con discapacidad. Por lo tanto, en esta firme decisión, el comité desde luego tendrá muy presente aquellas conversaciones que hemos tenido con sectores indígenas, tendrá presente aquellas recomendaciones que efectúa Daniela Vaz, porque es importante hoy día que hay un momento inmejorable, una plataforma sustancial para cruzar derechos humanos con desarrollo social, colocar sobre la mesa el tema de las personas con discapacidad indígena. Hoy día existe este necesario ensamblamiento, este necesario cruce, porque los derechos de las personas con discapacidad a la luz de la convención no es una isla de las personas con discapacidad, es la plataforma que nos permite cruzar los temas. Y por otro lado, la declaración sobre los derechos de los pueblos indígenas es el otro sustrato que nos permite ir cruzando estos temas. Creo que ya estoy en el tiempo, me imagino, para ir cerrando, y por lo tanto, yo quiero motivarlos, insistirles en la participación, en la incidencia que ustedes pueden hacer tanto en la presentación de los informes de los estados partes como también en los informes complementarios que ustedes pueden presentar y los casos en relación a violaciones individuales en virtud del protocolo facultativo, teniendo presente el lema de la convención que hoy día podemos decir nada sobre las personas con discapacidad indígena sin las personas con discapacidad indígena. Muchas gracias.
Muchas gracias. Muchas gracias, María Soledad. Y vemos mucha coincidencia en su planteamiento con Daniela, en el sentido de que hay oportunidades que deben de aprovecharse para poder efectivamente avanzar. Le doy la palabra, no, Mr. Peter Bersegui, from Minister Counselor from the Australian Mission to the United Nations. You have the floor.
Thank you very much, and particularly thank you to the International Disability Alliance and the Disability Rights Advocacy Fund for the opportunity to be involved in this event. And I'll try to be reasonably brief. And I think that, first of all, I'd say we welcome the discussion of this report. I think hearing the voices of Indigenous people with disabilities is something we need to hear, and we need to address the challenges that particularly face them. And we're very happy that an Australian, Damien Griffiths from the First Peoples Disability Network in Australia, had a major role in the production of the report, and I'm very happy about that. Improving the lives of people with disabilities is a high priority for the Australian government. And excuse me if I boast about a few things, and I'll be quite brief. Australia's National Disability Strategy outlines a 10-year policy framework to improve the lives of people with disability. And it's been quite an enormously successful framework in how we've gone about our responsibilities. I think, though, importantly, last week, on the 16th of May, the Australian Parliament passed legislation to deliver secure ongoing funding for a National Disability Insurance Scheme, or Disability Care as it's now known. And this program will officially start in 6 weeks' time. I think the important thing about this is both sides of politics in Australia supported this legislation. And I think this reflects that Australians of all persuasions wanted a better deal for people with disability, their families and carers. And they're actually willing to pay for it with an additional tax. And I think as an Australian on that, it's something I'm particularly proud as an Australian, as a public servant in Australia. On the same day, the First Peoples Disability Network, with the support of the Australian government, launched a 10-point plan for the implementation of disability care in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Island communities. And this plan was based on extensive community consultation. And this will start in 7 weeks' time, so a week after the launch of the Disability Insurance Scheme, it gets rolled out, the particular scheme around Indigenous communities. I can say, too, is that Australia's domestic commitment to people with disabilities matched internationally. Enhancing the lives of people with disabilities is one of Australia's 10 key aid objectives. And last year, we provided $109 million through the aid program to improve the quality of life of people with disability. I just might say, sort of supporting my colleague here, the reasons why we do this is not a welfare issue. For us, I think there's a number of three issues why we do this. One is that we don't think we can't eliminate extreme poverty without addressing the needs of people with disability, firstly. Secondly, it's a basic human right that all people, no matter what their circumstances, should have the opportunity to lead full and productive lives and live without prejudice or fear. And thirdly, it's actually good for development. People with disabilities, given the opportunities, have and do become active members of society, making an enormous economic and social contribution. But finally, I'd just say that we've got a long way to go to ensuring people with disability in all countries have the opportunity to fully participate in and benefit from development. And I think, as my colleague said, the high-level meeting in September is going to be a very important in terms of the post-2015 framework to ensure it's inclusive of people with disability, including Indigenous people. And like my colleague who was at the Latin American consultations, I was very heartened to hear in the Asia-Pacific consultations that the issue of Indigenous people with disabilities was raised by the Samoan delegate and widely supported around the room, which I think is terrific. So just to follow up, I encourage all of us to use all our leadership positions to ensure that the rights of Indigenous people with disabilities are respected. And I hope that today's discussions are both productive and fruitful. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter, and thank you for sharing the achievements that have been made so far, and acknowledging once again the support of the Australian Mission, along with the Social Policy and Development Division of the UN, as well as Disability Rights Advocacy Fund, along with IDA, the National Disability Alliance. My role now is to introduce the final speaker in this, first panel. Catalina de Vandes, she's representing the Disability Rights Advocacy Fund, and they have also played a big role, as was mentioned earlier, in where things are at the moment in terms of Indigenous person disabilities, beginning last year. Catalina, we welcome you to make your comments. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Seta. I will be extremely brief. I want to thank, of course, the support of the Division for Social Policy and Development of the UN, the Government of Australia, for the extensive support that you are providing us in order to facilitate the participation of indigenous persons with disabilities. And of course, the UN Permanent Forum for giving us the opportunity, and especially thanks to Myrna Cunningham and to Kayinka Sena for being our main champions in leading this issue into the forum discussions. And the Disability Rights Advocacy Fund is a grant-making initiative that supports organizations of persons with disabilities to advance their rights. While working in our target countries, we acknowledge or we noted that at least 16% of our grantees were organizations led by an indigenous person with disability or an organization of indigenous persons with disabilities. And we then also noted that there were no links between organizations of indigenous persons with disabilities and the mainstream organization of indigenous peoples. And we decided that it was important to advance the rights of indigenous persons with disabilities in all areas that affected their life and to help them and to facilitate them to make the links with other movements that were important to their lives. So that's how we started this initiative that basically was launched last year with the support, as I said, of the with OSET support. And right now we are happy to be here presenting our report. Last year when we came here, we didn't even have the possibility of dreaming about having a report on the situation of persons with disabilities. But thanks to the participation of the leaders, thanks to the support of the UN Permanent Forum members, thanks to the support of DESA, the participants were able to make it. And I think that the Disability Rights Fund is just proud to have played a role of facilitating that process. That is just initiating. We know that we have a far process ahead of us, but we're very happy that we have made it so far and that this is possible. It's just the starting point of a great, great process. So with that, I would like just to give the floor back to the chairpersons to allow our indigenous persons with disabilities participating in this event to share their experience with us. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Catalina. And indeed, this has been, I would say, an important year building this relationship, working together to prepare this report. We have learned a lot. And now we have a report and we have a caucus of indigenous persons with disability. This is a great accomplishment. Now we will go into the panel discussion and we will have the presentations of some highlights of the report from representatives from different regions. So I will invite Ms. Gail Rankin from the First Peoples Disability Network from Australia to share your presentation. This is the same venue in which we will have to continue the session at 3, so I guess that in 30 minutes they will come and begin to take us out of the room. So I will ask you to limit your presentation to 7 minutes.
Thank you, Mena. One of the greatest challenges facing Aboriginal women with disabilities in Australia is the remoteness of Indigenous communities. Communities are often small and isolated, and Aboriginal women are rendered vulnerable to violence and abuse, particularly in those communities where there may be significant levels of alcohol abuse. The vulnerability of Aboriginal women and girls with disabilities is further compromised because of their isolation. Some remote communities are made up of less than 100 people and do not have a safe places for women and girls with disabilities in times of need. Remoteness may mean that vital services do not operate there, and in any case, many disability services lack the cultural competency to work appropriately in Aboriginal communities, such as in communities where traditional language is spoken and English may be a second or third language, where strict protocols relate to women. I'd like to highlight that there is a need for advocacy for the development of new disability service standards focused on mainstream disability services when working with Aboriginal communities across the country, and for the Australian Government to support the building capacity of existing Aboriginal service organisations and the development of new ones to offer disability services. The remoteness of communities means that it may not be uncommon to travel up to 400 kilometres to reach a regional centre. In order to access a range of health services will require long distances of travel, which is very costly. Within Aboriginal communities and housing provided by government authorities, accessibility is a challenge. It is not uncommon for Aboriginal persons to receive a wheelchair which is ineffective and quick to deteriorate in the dusty desert conditions of some remote communities. In this respect, First Peoples Disability Network Australia has argued that environmental factors must be the key in determining eligibility to the new National Disability Insurance Scheme. For example, while one may be considered as having a relatively mild disability, the fact that they live 100 kilometres from any support and that their community is not accessible creates further disadvantage. The impact of colonisation is also a cause of disability. Dispossession of land, removal of children and general mistreatment of Aboriginal people have resulted often in intergenerational mental health problems. While the prevalence of psychosocial disability in Aboriginal communities is unknown, anecdotally it is believed to be normalised across many communities. For women and girls with disabilities, this is a major concern, particularly where they encounter abuse. Most of these conditions go undiagnosed and people turn to alcohol or to self-medication. There is no significant mental health support services in many parts of rural Australia. Furthermore, there are few opportunities to break the cycle of poverty, another outcome of colonisation. Employment opportunities are scarce, and even more so for Aboriginal women with disabilities. I'll draw this to a close because we're running out of time. I'd like to acknowledge the Australian Government and their support, and recently contributing to the First Peoples Disability Network in the strategy to work in the under the Close the Gap campaign, which we have never had any access to, but the work that FPDN has been doing with the government has ensured that our people with disabilities will continue to be helped and enhance their lifestyles. Thank you.
Thank you, Gail. We'll now ask Andrea Harrison from Canada to make a presentation. Again, reminding our speakers that we have two more after Andrea, 5 minutes maximum, please, so we possibly can also have some time for question and answers at the end. Thank you, Andrea.
Hello. I would like to thank the Disability Rights Advocacy Fund and the International Disability Alliance for this opportunity to speak. My name is Andrea Harrison. I am from Yellowknife and Northwest Territories, Canada. I am an Indigenous person with an intellectual disability, and I would like to share my experience in the education system in my country. My birth parents were both put into residential schools when they were young, and they ended up giving me up. My adopted parents had concerns about how I would do in school, mostly because of my disability. Their fears had a big influence how my schooling went. Before I even started school at the age 4, my parents decided that I would not be going to a regular school with the other kids. I would be going to the Learning Center. This collective started by my parents, and other parents of kids with intellectual disabilities. I also didn't go to school full-time. I only went part-time. I was always trying to get to school. I would tell my parents I want to go to a regular school and not the learning center. I was probably the only kid in my community who was begging to go to school instead of begging to stay home. I was 11 years old and in grade 5 before I was going to school full time. Even then, I was still being taken out of my classroom every day, and I was separated from the other students and isolated in a classroom with one other student. I was in high school before I was fully integrated into the regular classroom. I lost a lot of time and opportunities to make friends, and I missed out on a lot of things, not just school events, but also the things that kids do outside the school, socializing, parties, and even just hanging out. In many ways, I missed out being a kid, a teenager, and the part of the student body. When I finally did get into the regular school full-time, I was always trying to be included. I was bullied, and I was treated like a child. I didn't feel very confident in myself or in my ability to speak to other people. It took me a long time to get my self-esteem back and to start my life. I felt like I was 10 years behind everybody else. It was not easy for me, but I was determined. And I know it can be even harder for other students with disabilities. The practice of removing students with disabilities from the regular classroom helps no one. It doesn't help the student with the disability. It doesn't help the other students. It doesn't benefit our society. In the long run, taking indigenous students with disabilities out of the regular classroom does nothing but cause problems. I would like to make the following recommendation that governments and departments of education should actively ensure in policy and reality that indigenous children with disabilities are included in the regular school system and are not removed from that system, and to recognize that the importance of the social connections and opportunities that are provided through being included in the regular school system. Thank you.
Thank you, Andrea, and thank you for reaffirming the need of the regular school system as something that we have to promote in all of our countries. Now I will give the floor to Mr. Kamala Sen Chakma from Bangladesh.
My name is Kamala Sen Chakma, Pratishtata Parvatya Hote Bandi Kalyan Sanstha, PPKS. I am from the Disability Welfare Association of the Hill Districts.
Apnaderke shobaike shubhechha janacchi.
I wish you and convey you my very best greetings.
Bangladesh er dokkhin purbanchole tin parbotto jela Rangamati, Khagrasuri,
The southeastern part of Bangladesh has 3 hill districts, which constitute the hill tracts of Bangladesh.
In 2001,
According to the 2001 census, there are approximately 793,000 indigenous people living in this region.
তাদের মধ্যে শতকরা 10 জন প্রতিবন্ধী রয়েছে.
Out of that, 10% are persons with disabilities.
এই হিসেবে পার্বত্য অঞ্চলে 97,350 জন আদিবাসী প্রতিবন্ধী বিদ্যমান.
According to this, there are more than 97,000 people with disabilities living in the hill districts.
এই পার্বত্য অঞ্চলের আদিবাসী প্রতিবন্ধীরা বিভিন্ন সমস্যার জর্জরিত.
And people with disabilities living in this region face multiple barriers.
যেমন শিক্ষা, স্বাস্থ্য, খাদ্য, বস্ত্র ও অধিকার.
Like education, basic amenities like food, clothing, health, etc.
পর্যাপ্ত সহকারী বেসরকারি সুযোগ সুবিধা না থাকায় তারা এমন অবস্থায় অধিকার থেকে বঞ্চিত হচ্ছে.
Also, there is very less interventions by non-government organizations, which result in people with disabilities not being able to realize their rights.
এই অঞ্চলে আদিবাসী প্রতিবন্ধীদের শিক্ষার জন্য কোনো স্কুল ও উপকরণ নেই.
In this region, there is no schools which cater to the needs of children with disabilities.
স্বাস্থ্যের জন্য নেই কোনো উপযুক্ত সেবা কেন্দ্র.
There is no accessible health facilities in the region.
অসহায় দরিদ্র প্রতিবন্ধীদের জন্য কোনো আশ্রয় কেন্দ্র নেই.
There are no protection or shelters for people with disabilities.
তাছাড়া আদিবাসী প্রতিবন্ধীরা পাহাড়ি অঞ্চলের বসবাস করে, সেখানে চলাচলের জন্য কোনো উপযুক্ত পরিবেশ নেই.
Given the nature of the terrain and the remoteness, there is also no adequate means of transport for indigenous people with disabilities living in these areas to commute.
চলাচলের জন্য assistive device ঢিলেও ব্যবহার করা যায় না.
Because of the nature of the terrain, even if some people have assistive devices, because it is not accessible, people with disabilities face a lot of problems.
তাই এমন অসুবিধার লাঘবের জন্য একটি পুনর্বাসন কেন্দ্র স্থাপন করা অতি জরুরি.
It is therefore very important to have a disability rehabilitation center established for the hill regions.
আদিবাসী প্রতিবন্ধীদের আরেকটি বড় সমস্যা হচ্ছে দরিদ্রতা ও অধিকার. প্রতিবন্ধীদের গরিব ও হওয়ার জন্য তারা বিভিন্ন সুযোগ সুবিধা থেকে বঞ্চিত হচ্ছে.
Another major challenge faced by indigenous people with disabilities is poverty, which also has other consequences and results in the non-realization of other rights by indigenous people with disabilities.
দরিদ্রতা দূরীকরণের জন্য সরকারি ও বেসরকারি পর্যায়ে কোনো উদ্যোগ নেই.
There is no suitable schemes or programs for poverty alleviation which addresses needs of indigenous people with disabilities.
আদিবাসী প্রতিবন্ধীদের চলাচলের ও শিক্ষার জন্য অন্যতম বাধা হচ্ছে.
The transport and mobility of, as well as lack of access to education, are also major challenges.
ভাষাগত সমস্যার কারণে তারা স্কুলে লেখাপড়া করতে পারতেছে না.
Due to barriers in language, they are also being denied education in schools.
তারা নিজস্ব মাতৃভাষায় স্কুলে লেখাপড়া করতে পারতেছে না.
They are not being able to study in the schools using their own indigenous mother tongue.
যদি সেখানে নিজস্ব মাতৃভাষায় লেখাপড়া করতে পারতো তাহলে তাদের আরো সহজ হতো.
If they were able, indigenous people with disabilities were able to study in their mother tongue, it would have been much easier for them to access education.
তাই মাতৃভাষার মাধ্যমে শিক্ষার জন্য স্কুল অতি জরুরি.
Therefore, it is of critical importance to establish schools where children with disabilities from indigenous regions can study in their mother language by using their mother tongue.
আমরা সংশ্লিষ্ট কর্তৃপক্ষের নিকট আকুল আবেদন জানাচ্ছি যে আদিবাসী প্রতিবন্ধীদের অধিকার সম্পর্কে সচেতনতা হয়ে আমাদের মৌলিক অধিকার যেন শিক্ষা, স্বাস্থ্য, অন্ন, বস্ত্র ও বাস্তবায়নে নিশ্চিত করার জন্য প্রয়োজনীয় সাহায্য সহযোগিতা একান্তভাবে কামনা করছি।
We would therefore like to appeal to all concerned that the challenges faced by indigenous people with disabilities to access education, health and other basic rights be taken into account and it be addressed through proper interventions and programs.
আমার কিছু সুপারিশ আছে, যেমন
I have the following recommendations.
2013 সালে হাই লেভেলের মিটিং এর আদিবাসীদের প্রতি প্রতিবন্ধীদের প্রতিনিধিত্ব নিশ্চিত করা।
It is important to have representation of indigenous people with disabilities at the high level meeting on disability and development in
2013. 2014 সালের ওয়ার্ল্ড কনফারেন্সে ও আদিবাসী প্রতিবন্ধীদের আন্তর্জাতিকভাবে প্রতিনিধিত্ব করা।
It is also important to have representation of indigenous people with disabilities in the World Conference in 2014.
সবাইকে ধন্যবাদ। আমার নাম কমলাজান চাকমা, নির্বাহী পরিচালক পার্বত্য প্রতিবন্ধী কল্যাণ সংস্থা।
On behalf of my, that is Kamala Sen Chakma, the director of the Hill Welfare Council for the Persons with Disabilities, I thank you and wish you all the best.
ধন্যবাদ।
Thank you.
Thank you, Kamala, and also thank you, Gopal, for the translation. We've heard from Australia, Canada, and the Chittagong Hill Tracks in Bangladesh. We'll now go to Greenland, where we'll hear from Rita Petrus and her own story. Rita, being a deaf person, she will be using a sign language translation, interpretation, and then we'll get to hear some recommendations from her as well. Rita, you have the floor. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes, my name is Rita Petersen, and I come from Greenland. About education, which we have been talking about, that is very important. And for a deaf person, then sign language is very important. In Greenland, our only school for the deaf actually closed down back in 2007. So this means that deaf people in Greenland are not educated in sign language, which is our own language. Another obstacle is traveling and meet other deaf people, being together in a community. That's very hard for us. Many deaf people, we are not very good at writing, so this also gives an obstacle using text messages, which is very popular, which is hard for us. And the thing that is very good for us is to use video telephones if they are available for us. Talking about media's information from news programs, for this we would like to have subtitles for those who are able to read, or preferably a sign language interpretation of the news. Sign language, not much training, and for families, relatives and friends to be able to learn sign language, that's not an option, unfortunately. We would have liked to have more hearing people knowing sign language to communicate. Also, it's very hard within the labor market. It's very hard for deaf people to get a job. Factories, offices, companies, the harbor, they're very reluctant to apply to hire a deaf person for that job. And the reason for this, again, is the lack of sign language interpreters. Then, talking about home, there we need the devices such as doorbell, alarm blink, light, things like that. If there is a fire, then I, as a deaf person, I cannot hear this alarm. So for this, we need lights or vibrators and these kind of devices. That is very important for the life and safety of life at home. Talking about myself, I went to school. That was a regular school that is for hearing children. I was the only deaf. I was there from the age of 6 until 15. And then I went to the deaf school. But that was only for 1 year, and that's all the education that I have got. I so much would have liked to go to the school after that in Denmark. I would so much have liked to learn to write. But I applied for that, but I was denied. Then I would like to say Kuyanak.
Thank you very much, Rita, for sharing your story with us and reminding us of the importance of services, adequate services to respond to diversity. Mm-hmm. We will now open the floor for very few minutes, 5 minutes, to get some comments. So whoever want to make a comment, please speak only 1 minute, the most. So is there anyone that would like to? Yes, you have the floor.
Okay. I'm representing the delegation from Denmark and Greenland, and I would like to apologize that I did actually make a correction yesterday that was incorrect, that we had indeed a deaf school, and I understand now from meeting the delegation this morning that it was closed, and I would just like to apologize for that, and I think it's been a very interesting session here with a lot of different information that we can bring back home and take a closer look at. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Olga, tiene la palabra.
Sí, gracias. A mí me gustaría insistir en unas recomendaciones que vienen en el informe. La primera es la recomendación hacia el presidente de la Asamblea General para que asegure que en la reunión de alto nivel sobre discapacidad y desarrollo que se celebrará en 2013 y en la Conferencia Mundial sobre los Pueblos Indígenas que se celebrará en el 2014, así como en los procesos preparatorios y conexos, incluyan a las personas con discapacidad para que esto sea inclusivo. Asimismo, me gustaría recalcar que los estados deben incluir información sobre los derechos de las personas con discapacidad en sus informes en el foro permanente, al Comité de los Derechos de las Personas con Discapacidad también, a otros órganos competentes creados en virtud de tratados y al Grupo de Trabajo sobre el Examen Periódico Universal. Los estados deben destinar recursos al fomento de la capacidad de los pueblos indígenas para presentar servicios culturalmente adecuados, establecer y desarrollar organizaciones de personas indígenas con discapacidad, incluidas las mujeres con discapacidad indígenas. Los estados también deben apoyar la participación de las personas indígenas con discapacidad en las consultas sobre el programa de desarrollo con posterioridad al 2015 y asegurarse de que sus necesidades y perspectivas se encuentren incluidas en este marco resultante de consultas. Se incita a los estados donantes y a los asociados para el desarrollo a aplicar el artículo 32 de la Convención de una manera que incluya a las personas indígenas con discapacidad. También queremos invitar a los estados para que aseguren la inmediata integración de acciones dirigidas hacia las personas indígenas con discapacidad dentro de sus comisiones, secretarías o ministerios de atención nacional de los pueblos indígenas, desde la aplicación de los derechos humanos que enmarca la Convención sobre los Derechos de las Personas con Discapacidad. Por último, quisiéramos invitar a los estados partes del foro permanente para que dupliquen esfuerzos económicos para asegurar la participación de las personas indígenas con discapacidad de sus estados dentro del caucus de personas indígenas con discapacidad para tener la voz de la región, de más regiones del mundo dentro de nuestro caucus. Gracias.
Muchas gracias, Olga. ¿Quién más pidió la palabra? Over there, and then you. Yes.
Значит, это приветствует Международная организация Юрта Мира, приветствует вас в 12-м форуме коренных народов мира.
Greetings from hello, can you hear me? Greetings from Юрта Мира on the 2013th forum.
Значит, мы сейчас будем рассказывать про нашу организацию Юрта Мира имеет два олимпийских, паралимпийских чемпионов, которые благодаря Юрта Мира мы достигли для них квота.
We have two Paralympic champions that were helped through Юрта Мира. They received both of them received silver medals.
Настя Диодорова получила в 2008 году, Эвентийка из Якутии, из России. Мы получили дополнительный квот благодаря Анна Грин, Австралия. И она стала чемпионом, паралимпийским чемпионом по плаванию. Настя Диодорова.
Through help of Anna Green.
Откуда? Австралия помогла.
From Australia. Настя Диодорова won second prize in the swimming.
А в 2012 году Владимир Волынец получил тоже серебряную медаль в Англии, тоже он стал паралимпийским чемпионом.
Владимир Волынец, who did weightlifting, also won in England second prize in weightlifting.
Так что благодаря нашей организации Юрта Мира имеем два инвалидов паралимпийских чемпионов. Так что хлопаем, товарищи.
So Юрта Мира, sorry, I'm a horrible translator. We have two champions. For
Значит, еще объявление. Завтра 11:35 до часу будет презентация традиционной медицины Юрта Мира. В здании 45-й стрит. Приходите, пожалуйста.
Юрта Мира will be presenting tomorrow from 11:30 to 1 o'clock at the FF building on the 45th.
Которая вот традиционная медицина занесена
on traditional medicine.
Декларацию коренных народов мира благодаря вот после выступления, десятилетнего выступления Монреаля по 8G программе.
Which was entered in the declaration on human rights in Montreal on in 2003.
All right, thank you.
The gentleman in the back.
Yeah. Yes. There must be a need to enhance the actual structure and mechanism that exists in the United Nations and the convention, and it's a protocol that many parties and countries are signatory to that. It must be a mechanism to work with in reference to the, or specific to the needs of the indigenous people with disabilities, something that needs to utilize that, the existed mechanism, and must be in the future will be great and more effective and productive to invite some of those people who are working in this for years, and the commissioners and its rapporteurs, and there are amazing people working in that front in general. So how can we as an indigenous communities use that, what already does exist? Thank you.
So we will ask Zeta to answer.
No, sorry. I was going to ask Maria, who is the chair of the committee on the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. So I'm sure she's best placed to answer that. Maria, please.
Maria.
Muy brevemente respondo. Me parece el comentario que ha hecho el señor final muy pertinente, porque el reconocer todo el trabajo que se ha hecho es muy importante. Piensen ustedes que la generación de la Convención sobre los Derechos de las Personas con Discapacidad partió por la sociedad civil, por ese empuje que se efectuó entre el 2002 y el 2006. Por lo tanto, hoy día ustedes cuentan con muy buenas redes, muy buenas plataformas que permitan conocer todo aquello que se ha realizado. Hay páginas web que pueden también poder visitar para estudiar. Ayer lo conversábamos con Zeta y el grupo de él, en que es muy importante estudiar todo lo que hay, saber todo el abanico de posibilidades para transformarnos en interlocutores válidos ante distintas autoridades, tanto a nivel internacional como nacional. Ese sería mi comentario. Gracias.
If you allow me to add something, besides the various groups, DASA and my division, serve the Commission for Social Development, which is an advisory body of ECOSOC, where the Forum of Indigenous Peoples also present its reports. What some groups, among those I mentioned earlier on, I said youth, elderly persons, family, disability, people with disabilities, etc., what they did last year and in the previous years was to ask the delegates, the governments, to include in their delegations either young delegates or delegates with disabilities. I would encourage you to ask the member states to include in their delegations when attending the Commission for Social Development to include also delegates who are indigenous or who are indigenous with disabilities. Thank you.
Daniela, Zeta, would you like to make some final comments?
Yes, thank you, Myrna. On behalf of the International Disability Alliance, and in partnership at this event with the Disability Rights Advocacy Fund, the Commission on Social Policy and Development, and of course, the Australian mission to the UN. We would just like to thank and acknowledge the leadership role of Ms. Myrna Cunningham and also Mr. Paul Kaninke, the current chair of this 12th session, and to the UN Permanent Forum. Yes, I think we need to applaud that. We heard from Ms. Cunningham earlier that the journey had just been 12 months. The reference by Ms. Danielle of about less than 10 people to now around 20 people over a year. A lot of work, a lot of leadership, a lot of commitment has gone into that. Mm-hmm. So we want to take note of that, and acknowledging also the fact that we now have a caucus of persons with disabilities,
The network also has been established for personal disability so that we can be talking to each other and together fighting the battle collectively. The in thanking also the UN Permanent Forum for giving us this two occasions today, the launching of the report. So I encourage each one of you to grab hold of a copy of that report. I'm sure shortly it'll be on the relevant website. And that also we take seriously the recommendations that are there in the report to the UN agencies, to the various development organizations, to indigenous organizations. The way forward is inclusive development. Mm-hmm. The way forward is an inclusive one. We should not leave no one behind, including persons with disabilities. So we thank also the UN Permanent Forum for allowing us to use this very room for the side event. I think the panelists around here, we thank them for their contribution. Also thank our friends and colleagues who are behind me, I think, in terms of presenting their own personal stories to bring to home the discrimination, to bring to home the stories that often left untold faced by indigenous persons with disabilities. As indigenous people, we have a story of our own. But as indigenous persons with disabilities, it's a different story. So I'd like to thank again Ms. Myrna for co-facilitating this session, and also thank the panelists that are here and our colleagues who have shared their stories today. And to you, the audience that are here. I don't know how many are here in this room because I'm blind, I can't see you. But as a matter of fact, we have an agenda that we need to address and move forward with, and thank again the UN Permanent Forum for the report to help us guide us in do that. Thank you, Myrna.
Thank you. So with this, we have ended our side event and thank everybody for being here. Mm-hmm. Thank you.